So we're finishing up this series today called Signs of the Kingdom. And signs are things that tell us where to go, right? Or what's ahead, or even where we're at. And in this world, stuff can happen, and we wonder, like, where is God in this? Where is God in this situation? Is God even around? How do I even know what God is up to here? And these signs of the of God's kingdom, of presence, of the dream of God coming true, are things that we look at, because when we learn to recognize the signs, we can begin to see and recognize where God is at work all around us, working through the very fabric of who we are on a soul level to heal and redeem and rescue broken people living in a broken world. And it's beautiful and good stuff. But another part of these signs isn't just that they are things to direct us to, but they are also things that we are to be and that we are to live out. So peace and hope and restoration of community, they also direct us towards who we should and who we need to be as followers of Jesus, that our work is about peacemaking and restoring community and bringing people together and giving people hope in hopeless situations. And this week we are finishing up with this very simple topic on justice. You know, it's just, you say a few things and you got it surrounded. Just kidding. It's huge. And so it cannot do justice to this whatsoever. On this topic of justice. Justice means like righteousness, when all things are right. We tend to recognize it a lot better in the negative. We recognize injustice and unrighteousness better than what we do sometimes justice. So we know when something is wrong, when something shouldn't be the way that it is. It's that part of us that says things shouldn't be this way. And so we recognize injustice like in a legal sense that way. And also there's just things in life, death, for example, that when the tragedy of death comes and into our life, that we recognize a lot of times that there's something not right here. It shouldn't be this way. And there's a part of, I think it's so beautiful because there's a part of God's story. The first half of God's story is just written into our lives. There's a part into our souls. There's this part that knows that, that things shouldn't be this way, that things perhaps once were different, that things should be whole and good and beautiful, and that there's certain things that happen, and there's certain things that go on in life that just shouldn't be that way. It means that we believe somewhere deep inside of us that things should be other than what they are. And it points us towards a different reality. Towards a reality that we are made for. And so it kind of, just in the human soul, it sets us up naturally to be looking for hope, for looking for rescue. And we find the rest of our story in Jesus. So any place that this justice is going on, we see God's presence. We notice God's presence. We see injustices being exposed and coming to light, and then those things being corrected. It's one of the signs that God is at work. And when we see that in ourselves, we see that our eyes, God at work in us, we see us beginning to notice things that aren't right, that we were okay with before, and all of a sudden they make us uncomfortable. Sometimes people become Christians thinking that God and following the way of Jesus is supposed to make us happier, when a lot of times it makes us more uncomfortable with things that we find in our world and we find in ourselves. But it makes us more whole. It makes us more whole. If you want to just get your coffee and fall asleep, I'm going to go ahead and tell you what this whole thing is about this morning. Is that we think justice is about a lot of things, but I'm just going to hone in on and it comes in a lot of ways, but I'm just going to hone on in a really foundational thing, that justice is pursued through our personal relationships. That justice is pursued through personal relationships, and this is just a foundational truth of justice. And we can lose perspective of that in all sorts of ways in our world because we think that justice is pursued through really big things from far, like big people that are far away, through with big things that are far away, But justice, real justice and righteousness is pursued, and it is brought into our world through our personal relationships. And we're just going to unpack that for a few minutes. And if you don't need to unpack that, then just go get some coffee or just fall asleep. It's fine. Months ago when we were planning this series out, and I just felt like this was the text, the one that Joey read, that that I needed to talk about related to justice. I didn't even know. I was like, God, where does this relate to justice? Because this is about this guy coming to his end of life. It's not one of the typical verses that you would go to or stories that Jesus tells about justice and righteousness. There's other ones that are really, really great and so much easier and obvious to see and to preach on. But for some reason, somehow I knew that this is what God wanted me to talk about today. And then we got into this week and it started becoming more and more clear why God wanted me to talk about this text this morning. Because it's a parable, it's a story. Jesus tells a lot of stories to teach us something important about life, and that's what a parable is. And so Jesus tells this story about a man dying and spending his last decisions in life and what God thinks of those final decisions. And then I get into this week, and then there is just death after death after death after death. And we're all gonna die. And there's all things that there, and we want to live our life well, you know. And Jesus is trying to tell us something really important that we need to know in life before we get to the end. And this story is scary, you know, and it's meant to be. It's made to make a point, because nobody wants to, anybody that reads the story or hears it, they want to say, oh man, I hope that's not me. You know, I don't want to come to the end and God's pronouncement over my life is, you fool. You fool. What a waste. You're going to die tonight. What an idiot. You've wasted all the things that I've given you. You've run your life in the wrong direction. That is my pronouncement over your life, you fool. Nobody wants that. But it's unsettling, because there's also some things that are unclear. The typical way that we understand this is that it's about wealth, you know? So this guy has barns, plural, more than one, and he has a really great harvest. And then he goes and he sees his great harvest and he says, all of my great harvest is not going to fit into the barns that I have. I know what I'll do. Great idea. I'll tear down my barns and I will build more barns so I can put all of my grain in there, and then I can put at my feet. I can live the good life. I can have security. I can have wealth. I can live the good life, you know, and take it easy, because I have barns, multiple large barns full of grain. But there's a lot of stuff we don't know here that's really important, that if we think about it can begin to bother us. How many barns is too many? We don't know. What size were the barns? What kind of grain was in it? What was the market value of the grain that the guy had back then? And then how much of that grain did he have? And how does that translate into the market value today? And so what's the standard of living? And where's the line that Jesus says, where God's going to say, you fool, and pronounce that over your life? Because we don't want to cross that line. But we don't really know where the line is, because we don't know how many bushels of grain it was, or what kind it was, or how big the barns were. And we have things in our life that we don't know how to translate into bushels. Like we have life insurance, and we have retirement accounts, and we have accounts, and we have homes and all sorts of things that are of a different kind and different standard than what this guy would have had back then. And so we don't know when we've crossed the line. See, the Bible doesn't say that it's foolish to save. It says it's foolish if you don't save, because life happens and things are going to happen and you need to save. So on one hand, we're supposed to save money, but the other hand, we're not supposed to cross this line that where we become foolish and we're wasting our life. And where is that? And the interesting thing about this text that it doesn't say is that it just leaves us with the uncomfortableness of the question. And so we're supposed to just live as Christians with this uncomfortableness asking this question as we move from a 1,000-square-foot house to a 1,500, to a 3,000, to a $6,000 house, square foot house. We're supposed to ask this question and have this with us. How much is too much? When have I crossed the line? At what point am I putting more into luxuries and comfort and security than what God would say is wise and good and or what would be foolish? When have I crossed the line and begun giving things in my life to stuff that really doesn't matter? When have I begun turning over my life to things that aren't going to last? Giving my life to things that don't lead to life? When have I crossed that line? We need to live with that. And we need to take that question with us wherever we go. That's typically how this verse is understood. But this week, I see something different. That grain is what? It's food. What else is it? It's something you can put in the ground and it grows. So it's a seed. That's right. And a seed is potential. So one of the things that we see this guy doing is he takes all of his potential and he stacks it and he stores it away. And then he has this big influx of potential, and you in your life will have times where you just have a big influx of potential. It's like, wow, this is really great. And he stacks it and he stores it away. And God says, you fool, through the lips of Jesus says, you fool. So what would not being a fool in this situation look like to Jesus? So I asked myself this question, WWJM, you know, what would Jesus mean when he's about not being a fool? He's telling the story. What did he mean by this? What did Jesus mean? Jesus was acutely aware of the brokenness and the injustice in our world, acutely aware of the heartache and the pain that people lived with. So what did this man that was charged with God's big move to heal and rescue the world do with his one and only life in a way that points to a life that is not foolish and that is well lived and well spent? He wasn't a community organizer, though his world certainly could have used a community organizer around a lot of significant issues. He didn't run a disruptive organization or company that was really innovative and cool and did some amazing things, though there's a lot of really good stuff that can happen that way. And his world certainly could have used it. He wasn't a political activist, working for political change and change in different policies and laws. And people certainly could have used a change from unjust laws to just laws in Jesus' day. So what did he do? How did this man who cares more about injustice than you and I could ever understand, how did he spend his days? How did he spend his life? He healed the world through his personal relationships. He healed the world through his personal relationships with people that he could look at, with people that he could touch, with people he could look into their eyes and know their names and that knew his name. He healed the world through people that he actually knew, not like Facebook friends knew, not like that really awesome girlfriend in Canada knew that you guys are never going to meet, you know. Not that I have one, but I had a roommate in college that had a really hot girlfriend in Canada that could never make it down to Georgia for some reason. He loved people that were around him, and he served them, he healed them, and he told them the truth. He loved the people around them, he served them, he healed them, and he told them the truth. And his presence impacted and it changed people from the inside out on the soul level, so that this small group of people that was around him, typically, like most of his life, his ministry, he invested into 12 people, sometimes only into 3, and then there was tag-ons to this. But like, just, he didn't go very far. He never set up a website. He never had a good marketing campaign. And a lot of times when crowds would gather, he would do different weird things to get them to go away because he wanted to spend his life with like a small group of people that he could go an inch wide and a mile deep with. And what Jesus did with his life by investing in such a small group of people, by investing in his relationships, the people that he knew made a greater difference in this world than anybody else has ever lived. I have a whole sheet of amazing things that historians have said about, quotes that I love that historians have said about Jesus, but I'll just pick one. Historian Kenneth Scott Laureate, he was the he used to be the president of the American Historic Society, said that as the centuries pass, the evidence is accumulating that measured by his effect on history, Jesus is the most influential life ever lived on this planet. There is no reason to believe that our world would look anything like what it does now if it hadn't been for Jesus. There's no reason at all to believe that slavery wouldn't still be a common and accepted thing, that anybody would care about universal human rights or even talk about those things. There's no reason to believe that women's rights would be a thing. All of this stuff that is just so important in our world, that representative democracies and the way that they had it in Greece and things like that, but there was a lot of really good stuff that came out of this theological belief that all people are created equal. It's a theological belief that you have value no matter who you are, that you have value and worth because you are created by God. And that came to us through Jesus. There's no reason to believe that our world would look anything like it does without him. And Jesus invested his life into his personal relationships. That's how he pursued justice. And as the centuries pass, the evidence is accumulating that measured by his life on his effect on history, Jesus is the most influential life that ever lived on this planet. And when you think about making a difference, I want you to think about that. Jesus pursued justice. He healed the world in and through these relationships and did more for this cause of justice than we can get our minds around. So what does this mean for us? It means that a lot of really cool and exciting things. It means that your life really, really matters. It means that you have a way of reaching people and making a difference in this world that nobody else can. Because you have a relationship to people that I don't have a relationship with, and you have a relationship with them in ways that I can't relate to those people in that way. It means that your role is, and all the different roles that you have of mother, father, son, brother, cousin, coworker, all of these things, that they have huge, huge significance in life. That even if you your job is to work at some festival or something and clean out the toilets, it's a terrible, literally sucky job. But your life matters and your job matters because you have the ability to be around people that other people may not have the ability to be around. You have the ability to influence people, to pursue justice in the world. You aren't Caesar. You aren't president. You aren't the chief of this or the head of that. But you, like Jesus, have the ability to have certain relationships in this world. And by being you in this world, it matters. And that God can change this world through you and through your relationships if you let the life of God and the light of Christ shine through you. If you commit your life to loving and to healing and to being there and to teaching and to speaking the truth to the people around you and letting them do the same thing back to you. If you commit to that and you live into the way of Jesus in your relationships, the world will change. That is the best and most powerful way that you can pursue justice in this world. Even the big stories tell us that. William Wilberforce, who, if there's anybody that gets credit for really getting rid of slavery in our world, is William Wilberforce, a British politician. But you know how he went about that? Through his personal relationships. God had put him in a particular place that you and I are not in history and in his society, where he had the wealth and the connections to have relationships with a particular group of people, and he began working on those people to convince them that slavery was wrong. He told them stories. He appealed to their logic. He appealed to their reason. He introduced slaves and former slaves to them. And when they were willing to go, he would take them to slave ships that were parked in the harbor. All relational, all people that he knew by name, that he could look in their eyes, he could touch them. He would go to the pubs and have beer with them, and they would talk about stuff. And the world changed because a person in a unique position had relationships with people that the decisions that these people made affected pretty much the rest of the world. And you don't have to be William Wilberforce and in that kind of a circle to have that kind of influence. Guess who didn't have that kind of influence and didn't have that kind of circle? Jesus. But Jesus impacted William Wilberforce, and his life did. And so we don't have, so slavery was eventually outlawed and pretty much in most of the world because Jesus influenced people's lives. And then William Wilberforce influenced people's lives. That's how the world changes. Let me say something to moms and dads and people that may be one day. I've kind of noticed this about our world. People don't really like their children much anymore. It's kind of a fad. I don't know. They seem to be irritated by them and not like them, and they don't want to spend time with them. Does anybody else notice that? Okay. All right. Well, I'm glad you haven't, Sarah. That's really good. But I think it's a tragedy, and I think it's because people don't really spend that much time with them. And when you don't spend much time with your kids and their love tank gets low, they get really annoying. And then you're like, I don't want to spend time with them because they're really annoying. And then they're all at school all day, and then you find after school programs, then you find stuff on the weekends to stay away from them, and you keep them busy, busy, busy. And maybe you keep them busy, busy, busy because you don't want them to miss out, because you think that's your rhythm of life. If you have to do it all and you can't miss out, and you have to stuff life until it's exploding at the seams. But people don't like their kids much anymore, seems like, some days. And then they're annoying to other people, too, because if they're annoying to you, they're your children, right? They're crazy annoying. And one of your jobs as a parent is to make sure your kids aren't annoying. You have a lot of influence over that, a lot of influence. So if you notice that your kids are annoying to you, you need to find ways to correct that and to redirect that. Fill up their love tank, help them know, like, what's funny and what's not, and I don't know. But you will never have the opportunity to invest in somebody's life, to shape another life, like you do when you're a parent. I might get to mess you all up for like an hour or two a week, you know? But I get to mess my kids up for like 18, 20 years, you know? And so when they start acting in some dysfunctional way in their mid-20s and be like, I did that. That's me. I did that. You know why you think that and you're doing these stupid things? Because I'm stupid that way. There you go. For the good and for the bad. You know, you have this amazing opportunity that you will never get in the rest of your life. And it's really beautiful and it's really special. I can't go into your place of work and minister to you. You can't bring like your pastor along and say, hey, you know, minister to the, you are God's messenger to those people in that place. I can't go and be neighbor to your neighbors. You're God's messenger and God's missionary and God's chosen one to live in your house, on your street, to love the people around you and to bless them and to care for them and to listen to them and to hear their stories and to know them. I can't do that. Nobody else can do that. You are there. And I know part of you, I know some of you are really tired, and you might think, wow, this is just one more should in my life. You know, I just want to like go home and, you know, I have to mow the grass or something, but I just want to go home and I want to watch TV and I want to relax. I don't want to have to care about somebody else. I want to tell you, you are wired for this. You are wired for this. And this isn't something that steals your life. It gives you life. One of the people that died this week was our neighbor and friend and a guy that's come to church. And hit the slide. Some of you will recognize him. His name's Drew. He gave a car to the church, which ended up being, had to change some things around. But anyway, that ended up being the car that Saronica is now driving. That's her car. He just a beautiful, beautiful person, beautiful life, 32 years old. lives on Whitebird, lived on Whitebird. He just gave life and beauty and goodness to everybody that he was around. Like, he just loved people. He came from a really great family that, not going to know what it's like to want anything or to be underloved or any of those kind of things, but he had such a Jesus-shaped heart. When he graduated from this really great college, he was like, I want to know what it's like to be poor. So he spent a year homeless and scared his mom and dad to death, but he was like, you know what, mom and dad, see ya. I'm going to go to the next big city that I can find, and I'm just going to live on the streets and be homeless and have nothing for a year and see if I can make it. And out of that experience, he became some really good friends with some priests and got mentored with some really great people. He went and worked for a little while here at FCS Urban Ministries, which is out of Grant Park. And he felt this calling to help people that don't have a home to have a home. He enrolled in Georgia State in city planning and began working towards a position where he could affect low-income housing in Atlanta. And this past year, he just started this dream job that he'd been working towards for 5 years. This last summer, he married the girl that he's loved for 5 or 6 years and known for about 8 or 10. And then he went on a bicycle ride with his mountain bike ride around Athens with his brother. He got heat stroke, and it triggered a cardiac event, and he died, 32 years old. At Drew's funeral, his funeral was full of wonderful, beautiful people that look like the makeup of Atlanta. People that loved him and that he had given his life to, that he had served, that he had cared for, that he had heard, he had listened to them, that he spoke the truth to, he sacrificed for. And, you know, these people weren't people that gathered around and came to this funeral because they weren't life suckers for Drew. He gave his life to them, and they became life for him. They were his friends, and they loved him back. We are wired to live in this kind of a way, this way where we love God, and God loves us, and we love other people, and sometimes they love us back, but we love God, and God loves us, and we love other people, and sometimes they love us back, and sometimes they don't. But we're made for that kind of life, to keep scattering and spreading the goodness of God's kingdom wherever we go. And that's what makes our life rich and beautiful. And it doesn't matter whether we're a city planner, and it doesn't matter whether we're a homeless person, or it doesn't matter whether we're the guy that cleans out toilets at festivals in Atlanta. Like, if this is what we are meant for and what makes our life rich. You can be miserable and turn away from this and let darkness fill your life, or you can let the light of God come in and open your eyes to the world and the people and the potential around you. There is injustice that happens in all sorts of in people's lives. Death is often an injustice, and there is nothing you can do about it. There's nothing you can do about it. But you can be there for people. You can call it what it is, that it's wrong, that it's not what God intends to be, that this is not, that God is with us in our suffering. This living your life in a way that pursues justice through your personal relationships isn't an add-on to your life. It isn't something that will suck your life away. It is something that will give you life. And when you do, it won't just heal the world, it'll heal your own soul too. Amen.